You're listening to Idaho Matters. I'm Samantha Wright, filling in for Jim and Godette. It's Friday, and that means it's time for our reporter roundtable when we get you up to date on all the news that made headlines this week. And our panel today includes Will Waukee, reporter for the Mountain West News Bureau and Wyoming Public Media, Nicole Blanchard, outdoors reporter for the Idaho Statesman, Caitlin Hart with EastIdahoNews.com, Sadie Dettenbar, reporter for Boise Dev, and, Idaho Ed News, and Gretchen Parsons, managing editor with Boise Dev. I've got too many dot coms today. Hello, everybody, and how are you doing?
Happy Friday.
Happy Friday.
Happy Friday. Caitlin, I'm going to start with you. East Idaho News has been reporting on the Daybell murder case since the two children, JJ and Tylee, first went missing all those years ago. This week, their mother, Lori Vallow Daybell, was sentenced for their murders. We've got a clip here of Judge Boyce, who spoke during the sentencing.
JJ and Tylee, of course, 7 years old, 16 years old, were separate people whose lives were cut way too short because of you. Never got to grow up and be adults. The family and friends who have provided their impact statements, of course, have stated it better than I could about who they were. And it is a loss for everyone that you took them away from this world. And it is the most shocking thing, really, I can imagine, is that a mother killed her own children. And you simply have no remorse for it. Even sitting here today, there's no remorse for what you did.
Caitlin, so what happened in court this week with Lori?
Right. So on Monday, she was sentenced to three consecutive life sentences, meaning, you know, she will probably never see the light of day outside of the jail. She was also charged on herb sentence for the grand theft charges. So she got 10 years for that. And so many victim impact statements were read. Most impactful, I think, was from Kay Woodcock, JJ's grandmother. She looked right at Lori and basically told her that, you know, after they walk out of the courtroom that day, that she's basically dead to them. And that was kind of the consensus with all of the victim impact statements. But most shockingly during the sentencing was that Lori herself spoke. You know, we haven't heard Lori speak really ever, except for when this whole case first began. And she said things I don't think anybody expected her to say. You know, she said that she mourned the deaths of her children as well, and of Tammy Daybell. She called Tammy Daybell her eternal friend, even though, as far as everybody knows, she never met Tammy Daybell in real life when Tammy was alive. She said she's regularly visited by the spirits of her dead children. She said that they weren't murdered and that accidental deaths happen. Suicides happen and fatal side effects from medication happen when it's very clear these were murders. And so that really kind of stuck in the minds of a lot of people and was something that I don't think anybody could have ever guessed that she would speak in the first place. But what was also interesting is her defense attorney argued that Lori is about love. You know, she said it might not look like, he said it might not look like that from the outside, but he argued that Lori really has the best interest in mind for everybody. And, you know, that even though she's the most hated person in America, that Lori is about love. So it was a very interesting sentencing that ended in her being taken to the Pocatello Women's Correctional Center the next day.
We've got a little clip of Lori and what she said, saying she's spoken to her children, JJ and Tylee, in heaven. Let's listen.
I have had many communications with Jesus Christ, the Savior of this world, and our heavenly parents. I have had many angelic visitors have come and communicated with me and even manifested themselves to me. Because of these communications, I know for a fact that my children are happy and busy in the spirit world. Because of my communications with my friend Tammy Daybell, I know that she is also very happy and extremely busy. I have always mourned the loss of my loved ones, and I have lost many in this mortal world. However, I know them more than most people. I know where they are now and what they're doing. I know how wonderful heaven is, and I'm homesick for it every single day. I know we all lived in heaven before we were born on earth, and we were all adult spirits in the heavenly realm. We chose to come to earth as mortals. Heaven is more wonderful than you can possibly imagine. I do not fear death, but I look forward to it.
And Caitlin, you mentioned this is the first time we've heard from Lori since all of this began. And, you know, it was a little unnerving to listen to it when it was going on.
It was, especially when she said that she has been able to talk to her dead children. And she actually started off with a story about saying that when she gave birth to Tylee, that she died during birth and was sent to heaven. And now she has the ability to go back and forth between this world and the spirit world. And afterwards, during a press conference, Kay and Larry Woodcock, JJ's grandparents, actually said they've never heard that story before. They don't know if there were any complications with Tylee's birth. They don't know anything about that. So it was, you're right, quite unnerving.
All right. I can't remember. Is she appealing her conviction?
We expect her to. The last update that we have is that the Maricopa County Sheriff's Office in Arizona has begun the process of getting her to come down there, of extraditing her. So we will keep you updated as we learn more. But she is expected to appeal the sentencing.
And we still have Chad Daybell's murder trial to come.
Right. Yep. That is scheduled for April, I believe. And so my news director, Nate Eaton, will be there at the trial, I believe. That's the plan. And, you know, Chad still has his trial. Brandon Bordeaux still has his trial. There's a lot more to come in this case. It feels like the end, but it's kind of just the start of the beginning. So we'll see what happens.
Yep. And we'll keep paying attention. Gretchen, BoiseDev.com had a story about Boise Mayor Lauren McClain interviewing possible replacements for a city council seat. Now, that opened up after Holly Woodings stepped down. What's going on with that?
That's right. So Holly Woodings, she was representing District Number 5, and her family, she announced back in July that they were relocating to Washington, D.C. Her last day was July 21st. And so six candidates applied to fill her spot. Mayor Lauren McClain she selected three finalists, and then she began the process of interviewing those finalists this week. And so the six people that applied, that was Crispin Gravett, and I apologize if I butcher these names, Jeremy Guigino, George Holland, Dr. Julia Robinson, Gordon Rounson, and Meredith Steed. Holland, Robinson, and Rounson, they actually applied when Elaine Clegg stepped down to go to Valley Regional Transit. They applied for her seat earlier this year. They weren't selected. But of those six candidates, McClain, she identified her top three choices as Crispin Gravett, Jeremy Guigino, and Meredith Steed. And as for a little bit of background about those three people, so Meredith Steed, she sits on Boise's Planning and Zoning Commission. She's also running for the District's 5 spot this November. So whether she's appointed or not, she is running in November. And it's worth noting that the firm managing her campaign, they're also running the reelection campaigns of McClain, Jimmy Halliburton for District 6, Colin Nash, who was appointed to District 2, he's hoping to keep his seat as well, and Jordan Morales for District 4. Holly Wooding, she also previously told Boise Dev that she was endorsing Meredith Steed for her spot. And then Jeremy Guigino, he used to work for Reclaim Idaho. That was the organization behind the Medicaid expansion ballot initiative. This November, he's also running for District 5. And then Crispin Gravett, He's not running this November. So if he gets appointed, it will be for a short time. So he is the chair of Boise's Public Works Commission. Gravett, he's also the communications manager at Idaho STEM Action Center. So whoever McClain selects out of those top three, they'll finish Wooding's term, which would expire this January. And she said in a news release this week that she's begun the process of interviewing them. And then whoever she selects, they'll have to get the approval of the majority of Boise City Council before they're sworn in.
Gotcha. And we should also note that there was some other city council news this week that former Councilwoman Lisa Sanchez said yesterday she would not run for re-election. She lost her seat, I believe, after moving out of her district and has been fighting to get back on the council. And she said yesterday that her new job just would not allow enough time to serve. So
that's right. Yeah. Margaret, our reporter, she actually just wrote a story about that. And Lisa's new job, it's working for the Department of Housing and Urban Development. And I guess, yeah, federal employees are subject to the Hatch Act, which prevents partisan political activity. So I believe that has something to do with it as well.
Gotcha. Interesting. Interesting. Okay. We'll keep watching. Nicole, Boise police were involved in a fatal shooting yesterday. It's still being investigated. And you did a story yesterday about the number of fatal shootings by Boise police this year. What did you find?
Hi, Samantha. Yeah, I did. So yesterday we found out that there was a shooting near Ann Morrison Park. Boise police has said that they responded to a call and a man who had weapons charged at them. We don't have a whole lot of details right now. They did confirm that the individual died at the scene. That is the third fatal police shooting since the end of June. So Boise, and that's Boise Police Department specific. So Boise Police Department has been involved in fatal shootings of a 22-year-old Peyton Wasson on June 24th, 28-year-old Macy Juker on July 26th. So that was just a week ago. And then the unidentified man who was shot and killed yesterday. And there was a fourth shooting earlier this year, a man named Eli Nash, who was shot and killed in a Meridian parking lot by Boise Police Department. And that was back in January. So four fatal police shootings for the calendar year. We have this, the Idaho Statesman has kept data on fatal police shootings going back to 2000. And this fourth fatal shooting is the makes this the deadliest year for fatal police shootings in the 23 years that we currently have data compiled for.
It was interesting. I noticed, I think it was yesterday, it's been a long week, Boise Police Chief Ron Weiniger came out with a statement that said after the information on the latest shooting was released, and the statement said, quote, "We are seeing an increase in the frequency with which our officers are encountering people willing to use force and weapons against our officers." I think that it's very good of the Statesman to be keeping track of everything that's going on and giving us some fodder to talk about.
Sure. And I think, you know, that was an interesting point from the police chief. That's not something that I've personally been able to look into, is, you know, the circumstances, how many of these individuals had weapons, how many of these individuals maybe had mental health issues or other kind of contributing factors. That is reporting that we're hoping to do to try and compare, you know, past police shootings. I know there have been people who have had weapons or been believed to have weapons that have been involved in fatal police shootings. But yeah, it's definitely something interesting to dig into, and we're hoping to kind of look at where things are currently and why there seems to have been a spike.
And it's a good story. Check it out at the Idaho Statesman. Will, hello. You had a busy news week as well. Tell us about how Congress spent some time grilling the National Park Service about how they're spending their money, or they're not spending it correctly, apparently.
Sure. So like a lot of other federal agencies that are really important for the West, the National Park Service has been getting a lot of money from some recently passed acts like the Bipartisan Infrastructure Law, Inflation Reduction Act. And so, you know, we're talking hundreds of millions of dollars here. And a lot of the problems that sort of started to be exposed for the National Park Service during the pandemic are still sort of persisting, you know, especially at popular parks like Yellowstone. You know, there are still overcrowded trails. There's still over $22 billion in deferred maintenance and repair projects. And, you know, something that also is happening within the National Park Service is there's still a lot of staffing and housing shortages. Actually, In my neck of the woods here in Wyoming at Yellowstone, rangers just voted to unionize to advocate for better pay and try and reduce their workload. So Congress is trying to sort of speed up the National Park Service. You know, I should note, to be fair to them, you know, when you get a huge check from the federal government, it sort of takes a long time to be spent. And so the National Park Service says they're working on it, but they're certainly under scrutiny right now.
Well, that was interesting. You know, there were some complaints about, you know, we're giving you all this money, but the bathrooms are still a mess, you know. So I like your point about it can take some time to get that where it needs to go.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, one of the National Park Service's main people sort of testified in front of a group of angry Congress people answering questions and saying, hey, you know, when it comes to dirty bathrooms and things like that, you know, those are maybe one or two examples. But by and large, at the end of the day, there is still record visitation in national parks, and just Americans in general are really, really interested right now in traveling to public lands and seeing the great things that the United States has to offer and the great public lands, especially out west. So I think he was sort of asking to cut us a little slack.
Yeah, there's a lot of land and a lot of bathrooms. So absolutely. Okay, Sadie, you had a story this week about how the McCall Donnelly School District, And I really like this because this is going beyond education to how the district is trying to find affordable housing and child care for its employees. This is an ongoing problem in places like McCall. And tell us about your story.
Yeah, so the McCall Donnelly District is actually building employee housing for its employees because there have been so many issues with retaining and recruiting teachers and other staff members. And the wages that the school district can pay just don't match the housing prices in McCall. And this is an issue that exists in other places in Idaho, especially resort towns like McCall. I did a story last year about the same thing happening in the Blaine County School District, and just these areas where housing prices are overinflated. So the beginning, there's going to be a multi-phase process for this housing complex. And the first phase will be happening. It actually is already happening. They recently broke ground and they're leveling the ground for, I believe it's an eight unit complex. And it's the first of several. So it's a remedy to an issue that's ongoing in the district. I believe it's only 25% of McCall's area housing actually is being inhabited by local residents and local workers. And the rest is, as many of us know, cabins and vacation homes and things like that. And so the district, Eric Pingree, the superintendent, he said that this solution is kind of the school's way of fulfilling its role as the heart of the community. He wants to go beyond just education and try to really come up with some comprehensive solutions to problems that the district is facing.
Well, it's hard to get teachers if they've got nowhere to live. Nicole, tell us about this new Airbnb for outdoors. Fascinating concept. Some people love it, some people hate it. What is it?
Sure. So there is a website called landtrust.com. It's not super new. It was created back in 2019. It's fairly popular in Montana, which is where it's based out of. A lot of Midwest states like Nebraska, the Dakotas have quite a few properties listed. So similar to Airbnb, if you own a property, you can list it on here. People can make a booking through the website. And, in some cases, it is really similar to Airbnb where you are choosing or booking to stay overnight on these properties. But the main appeal is that this is for outdoor recreation. A lot of it is hunting, a lot of it is fishing, but property owners can also list things like shed hunting, which is where people go and look for dropped antlers from deer and elk. They can list things like mushroom foraging, hiking, bird watching, anything that you do in the outdoors, people can list that to do on their private property. And a lot of people think this is a great opportunity. Small you know, farms or ranches that maybe are struggling with income can use this to kind of help boost their bottom line a little bit. And it's just an opportunity for people who own land to, you know, do what they choose with it, which the CEO, Nick DeCastro, has said, you know, that's what landtrust.com stands by, is private property rights. The part that people are kind of raising some concerns about is earlier this year, there was a funding round that Land Trust did to get some investors, and their main investor was Dan and Ferris Wilkes. Some people in Idaho might be familiar with that name. Some people in Montana probably are as well. So Dan and Ferris Wilkes are from Cisco, Texas, and they are, a lot of times you'll see our headlines referring to them as like Texas billionaire brothers. They are oil tycoons. They own tens of thousands of acres of land in Idaho, likewise in Montana. And they got a lot of attention in the last probably 8 to 10 years for buying up a bunch of this land in Idaho. A lot of it previously had belonged to Potlatch, which is a logging company that let people access its land. And when the Wilkes brothers purchased this land, a lot of times they put gates across roads to the land. And people have argued, you know, that's fine if you don't want us on your property, but the roads were actually public property and it's illegal for you to gate them off like that. So there's some concerns in some sportsman communities here in Idaho with having the Wilkes brothers, who have been pretty controversial, kind of being the major backer of what is supposed to be, you know, this opportunity to let people engage in the outdoors more.
And it's a really good article. Check it out, Idaho Statesman. Sadie, what's going on with the Idaho Launch Program? This is Governor Brad Little's $80 million plan for Idaho graduates, if I recall correctly.
Yes, you are correct. So this plan was passed during the most recent legislative session, and it is it's an incentive program designed to get Idaho graduates into in-demand careers. And that phrase, in-demand careers, is kind of where the program is hung up, at least for right now. We don't really have a definition for in-demand careers yet. At the recent Idaho Association of School Administrators Conference, which was Wednesday and Thursday, there were some state officials there who provided a little bit of clarity on in-demand careers. And the term will be defined officially in September, I believe, by the Workforce Development Council. But as far as we know now, in-demand careers are going to be defined as the careers that have more than 100 openings, job openings annually, and a projected growth rate of in the double digits. And one of the state officials who was at the conference said that amounts to about 215 careers, over 200 careers. So it's a good amount of career options, things that are pretty obvious, like nursing, CNAs, things like that will be on the list. And so students can apply for Idaho Launch scholarships. They're $8,000 maximum and can cover 80% of tuition and fees to an Idaho college. So it can be a four-year university, a two-year college, a private school, a workforce training program, anything like that. And they'll be distributed based on the in-demand careers. And then if there are more applicants than there is money, they'll be distributed based on a need-based financial need.
Gotcha. All right. Interesting. We'll have to see how that goes. Caitlin, anyone who has ever lost a pet will want to pay attention to this one. This is fascinating. The Pocatello Animal Shelter is using, is this true, facial recognition to find your pet? Tell us about this story.
It is true, and it's super cool. So basically, the Pocatello Animal Shelter is implementing this new technology that's going to help pet owners find their pets when they go missing, and they're using facial recognition technology to do that. So basically, the shelter joined a organization called Petco Love Lost, which is a national database of animals in shelters that are also participating in it, where people who lose their pets can file a lost pet report with a picture on the website, and facial recognition will return possible matches with their location. So if you lose your pet, you can go in and throw a photo into the website and it'll give you any photos back that might look like your lost pet, which is super exciting because before this, animal shelters had to use, you know, pens and paper to file all of these missing animal reports. And everybody that would come in and report their animal was missing, the employees would have to go through binders and binders of all of these reports to try and help them find them. And a lot of times there were no photos. So now it's making it just so much easier to find missing pets, which is super exciting.
Well, I think anybody who's ever lost a pet and gone, you know, to the local, wherever your local humane society is, you know, there are those binders. And usually they hand you the binder and say, good luck. Because, I mean, they're overwhelmed already. And so you're kind of on your own. I think this is fascinating, fascinating technology to try and help folks.
Right. It's super exciting. And, you know, the ability to find something like this pet finder website is just, it's so exciting, especially for areas where there's lots of lost dogs, lost cats, stuff like that. So hopefully if you lose a pet, this will be a good way to be able to reunite you.
Absolutely. Will, I loved your story on how the BLM is spending, let me check, $161 million to restore ecosystems in 11 different states. This is fascinating. Tell us more.
Sure. Yeah, I did this story because, again, kind of referencing earlier in my story about the National Park Service, you know, all these federal agencies are just getting so much money from the federal government. You know, this is an unprecedented spending spree that we've been on in the last couple of years. And for me, when I see the numbers like trillion or billion, you know, these numbers with a lot of zeros behind them, it's hard for me to understand what is actually going on. So I wanted to take a look at just one project that's going on in Wyoming and around the West, just to sort of see an example of how these federal dollars are being spent on the ground. And what you just mentioned, the Bureau of Land Management, they are spending a little bit of money in every state in the West, including in Idaho, to expand and restore ecosystems that are critical for wildlife and water quality and recreation. So in Wyoming, what they're doing is they sort of went out deep into the backcountry into sort of a desert landscape, and they're building makeshift beaver dams. And what that does for an ecosystem is it improves water quality by sort of keeping water high into an ecosystem that provides home for fish, migratory animals, migratory birds, and things like that. And it really does improve water quality and sort of makes an ecosystem more resilient long-term. So it's kind of a, it's a good sort of, I guess you could call it just a long-term investment in our Western landscape that everyone that lives here sort of understands how much they love it and how important it is to them. So I thought it was a pretty decent way of looking at federal infrastructure dollars. And I do recommend all listeners, if you see numbers like I do with a lot of zeros behind them and wonder what's it actually being spent on, look into your local news and try and find small examples, because that, I think, makes it a little more tangible for folks.
Well, more tangible and gives you, you know, that concrete idea. Spending $161 million, you're right, it's a big number. And okay, well, I don't know where that's going, but you're taking it down to one project, you can see it right on the ground.
Yeah, exactly. And it was so fun to go. Wyoming is a rural state, and this story took me to the most rural place that I've ever been. You know, we're talking miles and miles down a dirt road, and the people doing this work are a group called the Wyoming Conservation Corps, and every state has this. It's a group of 19, 20, 21-year-olds who are camping out, cooking for themselves, fending for themselves in the backcountry, and you know, just talking to them, they have a lot of gratitude for being able to do these sorts of things. The word that they used was, we feel like we're a part of something bigger, or even quote, the end of the cutting axe. So they feel like, hey, all this money is coming down from Congress, we're the ones actually getting it done. And I think that that sort of gratitude and volunteerism that people feel, they're getting paid, but very little, that sort of feeling that they get, I think makes people feel like they're a part of something. And I think that's a part of the story that gets sort of lost when you read about these big numbers too.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Gretchen, we've got a couple minutes left, and I hear there's a brewery up for sale. It seems a little different. What can you tell us about it?
Yeah, that's right. If you guys have ever been to Powder House Brewing, that's in Garden City. It's off Chinden Boulevard. They've been open since 2015, and the owners, Mark and Lisa, they recently listed the facility for sale. They are retiring. So they listed the brewery for $3.5 million, whoa, which is a lot of money, but this is what it comes with. It's about 8,300 square feet, and that includes a big production facility and a tap house. And the tap house, if you've been there, they have those roll-up garage-style doors, so it can be outdoor, indoor. There's a large indoor seating space and also a patio as well. I think I hit all the main points on that one. But yeah, we have a little more information on our website about if anyone's interested about the who to contact and the listing details. But yeah, so for $3.5 million, it could be yours.
We know that we think that's unusual, but there have been so many breweries that have opened up, especially in the Boise or Treasure Valley area, that I'm guessing it's not going to be that unusual for that sort of thing to show up for sale.
Yeah, I feel like at least, I don't know if it's this often, but it feels like once a month, Boise Dev is writing about a new brewery that's popping up in the Treasure Valley. So yeah, it does seem like there's a lot coming online and then some people are selling.
Well, very popular for sure, for sure. We want to give many, 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 many thanks to today's reporter roundtable, including Will Waukee, reporter for the Mountain West News Bureau and Wyoming Public Media, Nicole Blanchard, outdoors reporter for the Idaho Statesman, Caitlin Hart with EastIdahoNews.com, Sadie Dittenbar, reporter with Idaho Ed News, and Gretchen Parsons, managing editor with BoiseDev.com. Check out their stuff. They do great work. Thanks for listening to Idaho Matters. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR Network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Samantha Wright. We'll see you tomorrow.
Want to learn how to be a master of business without going back to school? Listen to the Planet Money MBA. No suits, no PowerPoints, just the secrets of business school delivered straight to your ears. Every Wednesday till Labor Day on Planet Money from NPR.